This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Kaurna people. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend that respect to other First Nations people present today.
The Adelaide Crows History Locker Hall of Fame Series.
Carey lost it, has to fight on, but does so to Burns, inside 50, Ricciuto. Ricciuto's fourth goal, and it's all tied up.
Henschel, Ricciuto, he can line them up from here. Goes toward the goal square. Oh, that's top draw. If you've just joined us, that's what Ricciuto does.
Today's guest is club legend Mark Ricciuto, Premiership player, Brownlow medalist, and AFL Hall of Famer. In 1997, 21 games, you were All-Australian again that year. We'll just go to a bit of audio and just listen to you reflecting on 1997.
1 minute you're happy, next minute you're crying. Yeah, look, you don't feel part of it at all, and you can ask anyone who's been involved in it, you know, you just don't feel part of it unless you play. You know, at the celebrations that night, I went home early and I was pretty annoyed for the whole summer, really. Mm. I mean, it wasn't just me. There was Tony Modra, as you said. There was Peter Vardy. There was Matthew Liptak, Simon Jagenza. There was quite a few other players that missed out that year, and I think that was one of the driving forces of helping us win it in 98.
How does that sit after, you know, still a lot of times passed, but I guess it's still, you know, stings in the guts missing out?
Oh, no, I was a shell of a human. It was probably the first time something had gone wrong in my footy career, missing out. You know, everything prior to that, I'd either played in the grand final or played well or not been injured. But a bit of a reality check that things can go wrong. I started getting groin injuries halfway through the year in 1997. And I think I was leading the Brownlow when I started getting that. So, and then I just, week by week, I got worse and worse. And by, I think, the second last game of the year, I couldn't play. I had a week off. And then I tried to come back in the last week. Didn't feel any good. And I remember being at home on the floor. My girlfriend at the time tried to lift me up off the ground. And my groins were just excruciating.
Wow. Yep.
And I said, stuff this. I can't play this year. I've got to go and have an operation. So I had the operation, got wheelchaired out of hospital on prelim final day when the Crows come from 30-odd points down against the Western Bulldogs. Yep. When little Libber jumped up and thought he kicked a goal and he kicked a point, and he hadn't, and they lost. And the Crows had got into a grand final. So what an amazing performance by the Crows to go on and win the grand final. Yep. Without Tony Modra, who won the Coleman medal that year, and without me, who'd chipped in a little bit along the way, they still could win the game without a couple of their better players that year. But it was a horrible feeling. I ended up going to get a tattoo for 10 hours on my back.
Wow.
A few days after they won. I was just, I didn't know what to think. I was a shattered human. I dreamt about playing in a premiership, and I missed out on it and thought, I'll never live my dream, but we did.
Preparing for 1998 season, I guess, when they come back, and, you know, I'm a country boy as well. I know how much it means when they do the regional tours with the cups. I guess that was probably another dagger at the time. Did you go away and did you just want to get away from it all? Or did you go back and say, nut stuff, I'm gonna put my head down, I'm going to work harder? Or was it a real inconsistent pre-season from that point of view?
Look, I think there's always two choices, isn't it? You can spit the chewy and think, poor me, or you can get back on the horse, as they say, and work harder. And obviously I chose that path, did the rehabilitation, you know, had two hernias and two conjoint tendons repaired, and had osteitis pubis. So it was a big operation, and I just chipped away at it and got fit. And I had a pretty good 1998. You know, there was other players like Mods who'd missed out, Mark Stevens, Matthew Liptak, all those guys that you mentioned before that missed out, and we still had a great side. No one was going anywhere. We knew that 1997, we weren't the best side over the whole year, but we were just the best side in the finals. So we still had improvement to make. And, you know, with all those players missing out, we wanted more premiership success.
And at the age of 23, I think you responded in the best way possible. You played 24 out of the 26 games on the way to another All-Australian Guernsey, which is which becomes the norm for the next few years. I guess the relief, or what did you feel when the final siren went in 1998?
Well, leading into the game, I couldn't sleep. Fair dinkum, I was real nervous. Blighty took me and Vards off in the prelim final just before the end of the game, just to, I think, make sure we got there.
Yeah.
He's an unbelievable thinker, Blighty. He's just the best football thinker of all time. I hope that's what he took me off for, to make sure. I don't know what. I presume that was it. And he knows how passionate me and Vards were. Vards is like a bulldog, you know, come from out north. And he was a tough half-forward flanker, another one that you'd want on your side. And Vards had missed out the year before with injections in his heels and stuff. But, yeah, we couldn't sleep early in the week just thinking about it, just looking forward to it so much. But I think by about Wednesday, I was that tired, I started sleeping well. And Blighty had absolutely flogged us on the training track for the prior 3 weeks. We lost to Melbourne in the first week. And then we seriously could not have trained any harder for 3 weeks leading into the granny. And players were panicking that, you know, we'd be cooked and we wouldn't be able to do what we needed to do. But we didn't play that well in the first half. And North Melbourne didn't take their chances. I think at the half time it was 6-15 to 4-4. At half time, and another masterstroke by Blighty. Could have come in and just absolutely ripped shreds off the players. Not that we'd done anything wrong, we just hadn't played that well. But he didn't. He came in and said, "Guys, you've done nothing wrong and you're still within striking distance. You know how fit you are. Just go out there and take it on. Every time you get the ball, just play on. Run them off your legs. You're super fit." And one thing that I'll never forget, if you ever watch the replay, halfway through the third quarter, Bruce McAvaney, you know, the best commentator ever, says, "It looks like these guys have changed jumpers. They're back. They're back." And we just run over the top of them. And in this one instance was Mark Stevens taking a mark in the middle of the ground. He just grabbed the ball and played on. And it was just a masterstroke by Blighty. Just go out there and take them on. And I remember going at it to start of the third quarter, going from feel like we had no hope coming off the ground at half time to somehow Blighty turning us into thinking we're favourites to win this.
Yep.
And we just went out there and took the game on and end up having a huge second half and ran away with it. But, yeah, after the game, I didn't know what to think. Just, you're living your dream. Just soak it up and run amok.
Mark, last year you missed out, but you finally got one, buddy.
Yeah, I'll make up for it this year. It was just a great team game today. We've had great second halves all year, and we come from behind again today, and it's just a great effort.
What was it at half time?
Oh, we had a lot of players down in the first half, and North Melbourne didn't put us away, so we knew if we got into top gear that we'd be a chance to run over them, and it's just a credit to everyone. We've played as a team all year, and we've got the results today.
That's back-to-back, one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah, I think about time we earned some respect from the Victorians, and we've had a big year on the road this year, and we're going to keep it going next year.
Well played, and congratulations, mate.
Thanks, Dibber.
And we think in that game as well, there's a story. Rennie threw his mattress off that it was on the side of his leg as well, wasn't it, at the time?
I think that might have been in 1997 he did that, Rennie. But he had a huge part to play in both those premierships. Rennie was, I've never met a bloke more passionate about anything he's passionate about. And that was the Adelaide Football Club. And he had a huge impact. And, was just instrumental in both premierships, a big fella.
Malcolm Blight came in for 3 years and he won two premierships. As you mentioned, so much effort went into the first 2 years. Then in 1999, there seemed to be a real letdown.
There's no doubt. One of the things that stop good sides in their tracks is the hunger or the desire. You know, you can be fulfilled in life, can't you? You can live your dream. You can lose that edge. All those little things happen to anyone at any stage in life, in whatever industry you're in, whether it's football, business, or whatever. And if once you lose that edge, you know, you're as good as over. If you're a jockey and you don't take that split in the dangerous part of the straight, or if in the middle of summer when no one's watching you, you won't go for that run when you're training with footy, or yep. you won't do those extras, or if you're a business owner, you don't put in those extra hours. That's the difference between being good and great, and you don't win good premierships when you're good. So had Blighty achieved his goals? Probably. Had I achieved my goal of being a premiership player? Yep. Had a lot of the other players, you know, just exceeded their expectations of their careers? Probably. And were we the best side anyway in 97, 98 over the whole year? We're probably not. We needed to be super fit, on the edge, doing everything to win the premierships in 97 and 98, and we did that. And were we willing to do it again in 99 and 1999? Probably not, and that's why we slipped out pretty quick.
In 2001, you became captain of the club. I guess at the time, is it something you aspired to do? I guess naturally the way you played, you were always a leader anyway. And I guess, were you ready for it at the time?
Well, I was never a captain in underage sides because probably, as you know, in the country, you're always playing out of your age group. So, yep. I was always playing in my brother's sides or in men's sides way before my time. So I never sort of experienced being a captain other than in sort of representative sides or whatever. But, to be a captain of the Crows was unbelievable. They threw me into being the vice captain in 1997, and I loved it. I was passionate and driven and hungry from a young age. I dreamt of playing AFL footy. When the opportunity came, I certainly wasn't thinking about it. I was saying yes pretty quickly.
Let's go back and listen to another special part of your life.
Adelaide, Emre Schudo, one vote. Collingwood, N. Buckley, one vote. Sydney, A. Good, two votes. There is a three-way tie for the Brownlow medal, A. Goods, Emre Schudo and N. Buckley.
It really is a dream. I can't believe I'm up here. I'm probably more nervous than I've been for a whole lifetime, but I'm bloody glad I won it.
I guess after 1998, if you had achieved all your dreams winning a premiership, this is something you couldn't have ever dreamed of, is winning a Brownlow medal.
Yeah, that was unbelievable that night. It was so tight. There was about 10 players, I think, within a couple of votes, and I never thought I'd be a Brownlow medalist. I dreamt of it as a kid, like you probably did, Sauce, yep. But you never think it's ever going to happen. And then when it does, you sort of can't believe it. But, it was a great night. It was a tough time because my cousin had just died a few weeks before. So a lot of emotion, but, still good to win it. And it's actually one of those things, like when you win a premiership, you love winning a premiership for what it does for the people, and putting a Brownlow medal on a kid, their eyes light up. They think it's pretty special. So that's what I like doing with that medal.
How much did it mean to your parents and your family? Obviously, you spoke about the challenging time you were going through at that stage. I guess mean to, you know, become a Brownlow medalist, and you're so proud of where you come from. I'm sure Wakery came alive as well.
Yeah, well, it did. And once again, that's what you love about it, how much it means to other people. Everyone went around to my mum and dad's place that night at Wakery, and they had a big party and celebration. And I think they got to bed about 3 o'clock that morning. And my old man had to be on the tractor at 6. So hopefully the local policeman was going to let him off anyway, but he got on the tractor, and I think he was that tired. He was working at Matolo Spud Farms, which are the biggest spud growers in the Southern Hemisphere, and his job that day was to what they call bank potatoes, where you push dirt onto them. But he must have been under the weather that much. He fell asleep, and he was ripping the potatoes up and drove straight through a fence. So he had to put the tractor back in the shed and go home and have a rest that day. But it was a pretty special feeling. I think that night we had a big night in Melbourne, and then we come back to Adelaide and had a big night at the Alma afterwards. So, yeah, it was pretty good feeling. And winning it with Adam Goods and Nathan Buckley was great as well. Like, yep. They were good players at the time, and Goodsy's been a great ambassador for the game, and Bucks has been a legend of the game as well. So other than having to share people's dividends that they had a bet on me three ways, sharing it with two great footballers only enhanced it for me. Didn't take anything away.
The last one was 300 games. At that stage, you were the fastest to achieve it, 13 years and 83 days. It takes a durable and tough player to be able to get there, and to do that at such a young age as well must have meant a bit.
Yeah, well, that's genetics, isn't it? What you're born with, you know, your body and what it can handle, and your parents and your upbringing have an impact on, I guess, your ability to play with injuries and how fit you're prepared to be and what sacrifices you're prepared to make. So I was very lucky in terms of that. 300 games was something that, you know, you didn't worry about as a time looking back. You know, we're lucky to we've had four of them and plenty of good long-term players at the club. So it was a good achievement. Would I have loved another premiership being greedy as a captain? Absolutely. That was my dream for the last 4 or 5 years. You know, I share it with a few players. I had the word Voss on my bedroom mirror, and people probably think, gee, do you love Vossie, did you? And I said, well, I did idolise what he'd done being a triple premiership captain. And that's what my last goal was, to be a premiership captain. And next to that word Voss, I had a poem called Man in the Glass. I've told a couple of the young players today, it's a good thing to keep yourself accountable. It was, the man in the glass is about, if you can, every day you can look at yourself in the mirror and look back into your own eyes and say, I know I've done everything I could to be as good as I could, then you can look at the man in the glass. I think it's a great thing for footballers to get the best out of yourself, because at the end of the day, you're only cheating yourself if you don't, and you have to live with yourself afterwards, whether you've got the most out of yourself or whether you haven't. So it's a good little check for people to follow by, and that's what I live by. And in the end, we didn't get that extra premiership in 05 and 06, and I thought we were a better side in 05 and 06 than we were in 97 and 98, but we weren't in the finals, and that's when you have to be at your best. So I didn't have any regrets, Sauce, when I retired. I knew I'd given absolutely everything I could throughout my whole career.
Take us back to growing up in the country.
Growing up in the country was fantastic. At the time, you probably didn't realise how good it was, because we'd have to work hard on the fruit property all the time. We're like cheap labour for the old man, me and my brother and my sister, but certainly toughened us up and made us appreciate everything we got. And we'd get the few days off school if we had to stay home and pick tomatoes or pick watermelons or pick whatever was ready, but that was a great lifestyle. We grew up on the banks of the Murray River, so I could get on the motorbike and go fishing or yabbing or anything like that. So very, very lucky, and sport was a massive part of it as well.
Now, that would have played a big part in, I guess, shaping your ability to have a work rate and ability to work hard as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We did work hard. There was no choice. It was a small family property, and when things were ready to be done on the property, we had to do it. So, from the worst job of picking olives or something like that, felt like forever to fill up a bucket, to throwing up buckets of grapes throwing up watermelons, up to the old man. It was hard work, but that's what you had to do. You're like a little team on the fruit property just to survive. So that was looking back, unbelievable upbringing, and but playing sport up in the country, there's nothing better.
What number sibling were you, and were you able to sort of tell them what to do, or were you the one getting pushed around?
I was the last of three. I got beaten up regularly by my brother and put into a place by my older sister. So I was a little mistake down at the end, and just sort of towed the line. But my brother used to suck me in and tie me into a wrestle or an argument, and then when he was sick of me, he'd just finish me off.
Along with the river, mate, you said playing for Waker is one of your passions. You were able to debut and played A grade at 15. I think you also won a premiership before coming down to Adelaide, if I stand corrected.
Yeah, that year we played, that was in 1991. We've actually got our 30-year reunion coming up in a few weeks. So they hadn't won a flag for 17 years in a six-team comp, Sauce. So I learned a few things on that footy trip at the age of 16. I just turned 16 before the footy trip, and off to Port Pirie we went on the big footy trip. But no, it was a great occasion to playing in a grand final. I played with my brother, which was even better. And, you know, like all things, you look back at it now and, you know, you realise how special it was for the community. No different to winning the flag at the Crows. Winning the flag for Waker, it was a big thing for the town. And, yeah, it was a real highlight of my life. Probably the second best game I've ever played in behind the Crows premiership. So, yeah, that was a special day.
Now, I can tell how much the country lifestyle means to you. And one of your lifelong friends as well was someone that recruited you, Neil Curley. He came up and shared an ale or two with the old man and watched your turn run on.
Yeah, I didn't know he was coming up to watch. It was the last minor round game of the year. And I was in the rooms getting ready for it. We're playing Mods' old team, Renmark, at Waker. And my best mate ran in and said, "Oh, Neil Curley's here to watch you." And I said, "Oh, shit, okay, I'll try a bit harder today." And my old man had saved a car park for him on the Oval. Yeah. And recruiting was done a little bit differently in those days. Saucy rocked up with an esky full of beer and sat next to my old man and said to my dad, where's the boy playing? And Dad said, "Oh, I think they got him lined up in the bloody Ford pocket, girls." And he said, "I didn't come up here to watch a kid playing a Ford pocket. I want him on the ball." But I kicked 10. So.
And so I'm sure they had a good day as well.
He was happy with that. He was half pissed and went back to Adelaide and said, "Oh, I think we better sign this kid up."
You obviously, really connected to the Wakery Footy Club and the lifestyle. Was it hard coming to Adelaide and you played for West Adelaide at 16? Did you miss, I guess, playing back home with your brother and your friends?
Yeah, well, at the end of that year, so West Adelaide signed me up and the Crows signed me up, and West Adelaide actually offered for me to come down and go to boarding school at Sacred Heart, but I couldn't do that. I wasn't ready to leave home, so instead we did 52 trips to Adelaide the next year. So my old man had picked me up from school at about 1 o'clock. We'd drive down, train, drive back to Wakery, and then drive down on the weekend. Pre-game play and then drive back that night. So it was a busy year, 400-kilometre round trip, knew every bump in the Sturt Highway, and that was year 12 as well, so it was a pretty busy year. Did a bit of homework in the passenger seat, but it was a great year, and to play under Neil Curley was something I'll never forget.
I guess from the start, you came onto the scene pretty quickly. Even at Waker, you're able to impact against the men in the A grade. In 1993, you played 19 games and got the Rising Star nominee. And then as a 19-year-old, you're All-Australian after playing 21 games. So did that all happen really quickly, and were you prepared for what AFL footy was?
Everything was happening quickly at that time, Source. I'd sort of played under-16s footy at Wakery in 1990, then A-grade in 91, Westies in 92, Crows in 93. So it was a quick progression. I remember in the finals in 1993, that was a real opportunity that got away from us. We had to win the last game of the year just to get in the finals. Yeah. I still remember it at Footy Park. Playing against Collingwood, and we had to win to get in, and we did win, and we got in, and then we won our first final at Waverley against Hawthorn. We'd landed back at the Adelaide airport, and we had the police come onto the plane, and I thought, shit, what's Mods done? He's done something wrong. But we hadn't even had a chance to go out, so I knew he probably hadn't done anything, but the policeman came on and said, "Look, we need your help. We fear for people's lives. 5,000 people have crammed into the old Adelaide Airport terminal, and people were getting squashed." So we had to squeeze through, get our bags off. It was just pandemonium, really was. And then the next week we went back to Melbourne, and we played in the second semi-final against Carlton. We kicked 8 goals, 22, and lost. As you should if you kicked 8 goal 22, but we should have won that game. We didn't come back for the prelim final. We actually had to get off the plane at a different tarmac because they were worried about the week before.
Yeah.
So in the prelim, we were 7 goals up in the prelim and managed to lose that game. So we should have went straight through and played Carlton. We didn't, and we lost. But I remember as a 17-year-old thinking, we'll be right, we'll come back next year.
Yep.
And next year we didn't even make the finals. Coach got sacked, and we started a run of 3 years without finals. So a little lesson there for everyone. Just because you make finals 1 year doesn't mean you're going to get better and make it the next. So, things did happen pretty quick.
Was that your real introduction, I guess, to finding out how much footy is loved in our state. We're very fortunate here that we are a footy mad population, and I guess that's a good showing. You'd only been in the competition for 2 or 3 years and there's already fans rocking up to greet you coming back from Melbourne.
I don't think Adelaide or South Australia knew what AFL football was for the state at that time. For me, I was just a bright-eyed kid from the bush and I was just running with the flow of what was going on from week to week. Certainly South Australia and Adelaide was changing and developing, and everyone was just going along with it. But throughout the whole career, you just continually got surprised at what football meant for people, whether it was 70-year-old grandmas and grandpas or 7-year-old kids that were looking up to their idols. It was an amazing feeling and one that I never took for granted, coming from the background that I come from. And one of the, you look back after football and you go, yeah, the best thing about football was not the premierships you won, but the impact you could have on your supporters and members.
People sometimes assume because, you're big and strong and you had such a successful career that it comes easy. I've spoken to Mark Bickley, premiership captain, about, how understated it is, how hard you worked. You're a powerful athlete. I guess you're probably the first of the hybrid midfielder that played midfield, then was able to go forward. Take us back to your preparation and I guess what you did to go over and above to make your game better.
Once again, I must have been born with this, but I can still remember as a 8-year-old kid or whatever I was, I can still remember going to, and this might make you laugh, but yeah. I remember going to grab a yo-yo. I used to love yo-yo biscuits. We weren't spoiled.
We'd eat
too
anything,
much.
Yeah.
I remember going to grab yo-yos and my conscience telling me, don't eat that.
Wow.
It might be the difference in winning the Brownlow medal. I can still picture it right now at the age of 45. And the whole way through my career, still listen to my conscience. Sometimes most of the time that's a bad thing. But I'd train like that. And if I didn't train, I'd be filthy on myself. Or when I did train, I'd train like an animal. And I used to run till I spewed. I'd get off a houseboat on my trips at Christmas time and run. I'd run on the bitumen back at Wakery. We'd train in the off season. We'd have, when we started to get really professional from about 96 onwards, we'd have 2 weeks off the last game and we'd train for those 6 weeks and we'd train really, really hard. So, yeah, I always doubted myself, Sauce, right through to the end. Even though you have success along the way, you're always worried about, am I good enough? Have I still got the speed? Can I still get a kick? Am I past it? So whether you're me or whether whoever else, I've spoken to other good players and they always doubt themselves as well. So, for anyone out there listening who loves footy, there's no substitute for hard training.
The other thing you're admired for, Roo, is your passion for the club. Obviously, I'm very fortunate to work with you closely around the club and, your relationship and your respect for the club staff, sponsors, and you always speak about how important they were in your career, I reckon, is something that, people can take a lot of admiration from. So do you want to talk about how much it meant to you, whether it was the boot starter, whether it was the coach? You treat everyone the same and you give everyone the respect.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. That's just another product the way you brought up, I think. My nonno used to wave to everyone at Wakery and he used to, when he'd go to church or whatever, he'd have his boot full of fruit and veggies and he'd give them whatever excess he'd have, he'd give that away. And that definitely got passed on to me, through my dad. I remember when, he would come down to watch me play, he'd bring a bootload of whatever fruit was available and he'd bring it down to footy park here. I still remember the faces of Julie Cunningham and Pauline Biglands behind, he'd have bags of oranges and he'd have watermelons and pumpkins and I don't know what they thought because they'd probably never seen that amount of fruit, but we'd bring it down, they'd share it at the club and, that's sort of just what we did. That's just how we grew up, being generous and helping others. And, what footy clubs are like in the country, that's what they survive on, everyone chipping in and doing their bit. At Wakery, we'd have cars around the oval, tooting, then you're playing at footy park, you'd have 50,000 people there. I just love the fact that we had so many supporters and how passionate they were. So I remember McLeod and myself always staying behind at signing sessions or clinics. And it might take an hour to get through the lineup, but we'd stay until everyone got what they wanted. Not because we were told to do it, because we wanted to make all the kids happy. And I respect, always respected sponsors for what they put into the club, because I understand, you know, the value of the dollar, and, you know, a club can't survive without their sponsors. So that was ingrained in me early as well. So transition to past playing and being on the board, nothing's different. I'm, you know, I love the club. I want our supporters to win another premiership. It's been far too long between drinks. 05-06 we missed out. 2012 we missed out. 2017 we missed out. And you know, there's a lot of people getting on in their lives that would love nothing more than to win a premiership before they go to another place. So that's why I'm on the board, and that's why I want to do anything I can do to help the current team and the current coaches win a flag. I know we're in the right direction. We've made some really tough calls the last few years. They've been very hard on individuals, and hopefully in a couple of years they'll look back and understand why we made them, and hopefully win a flag in the not too distant future.
The way you speak, you're very connected to not only Wakery and the Crows and supporters. How does it sit with you? You're an 8-time All-Australian Tours captain. The other 8-time All-Australians are Gary Ablett Jr., Patrick Dangerfield, Lance Franklin, Robert Harvey. Paul Roos is a 7-time. How does it sit with you being a country boy to be up there with the greats?
Yeah, I don't really think about that stuff until it gets read out, but they're good names to be alongside of, other than Patrick Dangerfield. No, I love Danger. Wish he won 8 at Adelaide. And then we would have won another premiership probably, yep. But Danger probably knows that as well. But no, look, I just pinch myself that I had a lucky career and, you know, use it as motivation for other kids from the country. I love the fact that we've got some good SA kids on our team at the moment. And I remember Harry Schoenberg's dad coming up and introducing himself. He just reminded me of my old man, you know, just a country bumpkin,
yep.
Having a beer at the foot. And I just had to have a laugh. And I just hope that, you know, we got good SA kids striving to play for the Crows. And, you know, to a lesser extent, Port Adelaide, you know, like I'm a fiercely loyal Crow, but, you know, I also respect Port Adelaide and love the fact that they've got South Australian kids there as well. And, you know, part of me loves any kid playing at any football club, and the pathway that they can have and the success that they can have is good for all communities and towns throughout Australia.
Just to finish up, Roo, who are your biggest influences? I think being a country kid myself, you know, you're always someone I admired growing up with how you carried yourself, and I think that legacy's really continued now with the culture we got at the club. Who are the people that you looked up to and you admired from afar?
Apart from Mum and Dad, who did everything for me and gave me every opportunity, my old man couldn't do that. He was one of 6 kids. He had 5 sisters, and he had no choice but to stay at home and work on the fruit property, so he couldn't come down and play SNFL football, even though he had a couple of opportunities. So love the Mum and Dad and what they did. Neil Curley gave me an opportunity and sort of gave me I'm still mates with Curls right now, and he's in his mid to late 80s and still got a great relationship with Curls. Russell Ebert was Till Cup coach and gave me a bit of a hand along the way. Peter Hurley has been a close friend for early days at the Crows, and, you know, I sourced him out for a bit of help trying to turn some money that I made out of football into business to shore up my future, and we've had a great relationship. He's been my sort of business mentor. Malcolm Blight has been the best coach I've ever had, the best football person. Neil Craig's been unbelievable as a developer of men, and to teach me how to push my body to a level that never thought it could be pushed before. Probably, that probably cost me the 97 premiership, but won me the 98 premiership, and will teach me lessons that I'll have for my whole life. Cornsey was an unbelievable coach as well. I mean, he could have been a premiership coach in year 3 of the club, and I rate Cornsey very, very highly. He was very unlucky not to win a premiership, but he's a great fella. He's a hard nut, Cornsey. I mean, we train super hard under him. You know, everyone thinks Blighty's a tough bugger, and he is, but Cornsey's not far behind him. So I was lucky that I was being exposed to people like Curls, Cornsey, Craigie, Blighty, and all other people along the way as well. You can talk about other people underneath them. They all played their role. So very, very lucky to be exposed to that quality of people. And you can throw Bob Hammond and those sort of people into that conversation as well.
Roo, you got unparalleled passion for the club. Thanks very much for joining us, and we really appreciate the chat.
Thanks for being in my first podcast too, Source.
The Adelaide Crows History Locker podcast is hosted by Sam Jacobs, produced by Emily Brand. Additional audio thanks to Channel 7, Fox Footy, and the Adelaide Football Club.